Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
Hey, happy to announce something really cool that you won't want to miss. We just launched The Lounge. This is a free weekly newsletter tailored just for you, the physician entrepreneur and investor. You're going to stay ahead with the latest news in tech trends, entrepreneurial strategies, alternative investing, and passive income tips. And there's so much more, all designed to further your career and financial goals, delivered straight to your inbox every week. We'll also be spotlighting fellow physician entrepreneurs, sharing success stories, and providing valuable lessons from peers who are navigating the same exciting path that you are. No cost, no hassle, just important insights delivered straight to you every week. To sign up, just go to bootstrapmd.com/the lounge and subscribe today. It's 100% free. Once you enter the lounge, get ready to start shaping your future now. Hey guys, it's Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Welcome to another edition of Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. If you've been a long-time listener to the program, thank you. And if so, you probably recognize my next guest. She's a dear friend of mine, and we had to have her back on the program. She's an integrative physician, a thought leader, a master trainer in NLP, which stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming and Hypnosis. She's a founder of Mind Remapping Company. She's helped leaders and professionals achieve transformational results by overcoming internal barriers and mastering trauma-informed communication. Her work emphasizes the power of language in shaping reality and fostering psychological safety within organizations. She's a graduate of Emory University, Morehouse School of Medicine. She's spoken at TEDx Asheville and served as a faculty facilitator for the ACGME's Equity Matters Project. She's the author of The Wellness Blueprint and co-author of Conscious Anti-Racism. She's also, of course, a great friend of mine, Dr. Myesha Claiborne. Myesha, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm so good. It is good to be back. It's good to be reconnected. And I know it has been some time. We have our big lives. And always, though, I've followed you for many years and have always admired. And so it's really just great to be back with you on the show.
Well, again, great to have you on. And I know you wanted to talk about communication and how it pertains to in this crazy society that we live in. And we seem to be less communicable. You know, everybody now just texts, or, you know, nobody's talking directly. And we're really having some issues. I even talked about this morning about some personal issues I've been having with communication in my practice. So let's talk about it. What do you mean by some communication issues, or how as physicians can we learn by communicating better?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I'll start by kind of sharing, I think, some of the problems that I'm seeing in, both in organizations and within practices. So, you know, whether you're a business owner, whether you happen to be in that transition, what I do notice is that there are problems with physicians connecting with their staff, connecting, you know, the communication problems inside of the practices. If in organizations, there's a lot of toxic communication, not so healthy communication between leaders and their teams. And so I think one of the things that has been amplified since the pandemic is the isolation, and the way that we communicate is a lot more digital than we used to. And to be quite honest, as physicians, but as people in general, we're not really taught overtly how to communicate effectively, right? So we learn how to communicate, but we learn passively. We learn by inheriting our family's way of communicating. We've learned to communicate by how we were communicated with during our residency programs, during our medical school programs, and it's not always the most effective way. And so then we have a lot of this toxicity in our community, which leads to, you know, high turnover in practices, you know, not being able to manage teams between colleagues, toxicity between colleagues. And so it can be very challenging. And this can pour over into our own personal relationships as well. So I still coach a lot of physicians around burnout and interpersonal leadership type things. And what I see a lot of is challenges with interpersonal relations, particularly as it pertains to communicating.
As a doctor, I wasn't used to asking for help, especially when it came to subjects outside of medicine. But then I found physiciancoaches.com. In an instant, I found hundreds of experts to help me in all aspects of life, on areas I was afraid to ask. Dealing with burnout, starting a side gig, money management, even help with my marriage. And the best part? Nearly all experts are physicians themselves. After reading their profile and a quick chat, I knew I found the right mentor for me. At physiciancoaches.com, help from professional colleagues is just a click away.
So when you discuss it, you said it accelerated during the pandemic. Why do you think that is? Is it the way that we communicate? Is it mostly through the internet or texting? Is it because we're using too many emojis now to describe our feelings? What exactly is it?
Honestly, I think part of it is that, you know, we are forced to do more digital communication. But I think more so is the trauma of the pandemic. So, you know, if you already are not the best communicator, or you already have challenges relating, and then all of the things, you know, there's the pandemic, there's the racial tension and violence, there's the isolation, there's the mental health decline. When you're not at your best self from a mental health standpoint, then all of the skills that you may have had, they kind of go out the window because you're just trying to survive. So there's actually a lot of research around the way burnout, particularly, and people who are not at their best place from a mental health perspective, so mental illness or mental health decline, impacts the way we communicate with people. It interrupts the decision-making process and collaboration, and it interrupts our ability to put what's in our minds out into our words effectively, because we're sort of managed by that amygdala, right? That amygdala hijack. We're on hypervigilance. We're looking over our shoulder. We're not feeling safe. And so when we don't feel safe, when we're feeling that sort of always experience of like someone's out to get us, or like looking over our shoulder, like we're constantly fatigued, we can't connect to that higher thinking brain. We just can't. And so it's really, I think, a function of a lot of things, but overarching trauma and recovering from the trauma of all of the things that happened during the pandemic, not just COVID-19, but all of the things that happened during that time, and not having recovered from a mental health standpoint, it doesn't allow us to recover our skill sets.
Yeah. And I kind of see that, you know, specifically, there's a couple of instances that I can think of. It's like, for example, you know, when we would talk with our employees, we would only discuss it during work hours. So 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever that is. And there was, with my partner, she had texted out to our employees something that wasn't as important, but it was occurred to like on a Saturday morning where they were not there. And on Monday, there was a lot of this miscommunication because they didn't respond until Monday. And my employees felt that they were like, oh, should I have contacted my boss on the Saturday morning? Mm-hmm. And then we had to step back and realize, hey, you know, because we're always working, we don't think about it. Mm-hmm. But they felt bad. They felt like, oh my gosh, we weren't available. Am I in trouble because I didn't respond to my boss for 2 days? Mm-hmm. Well, they shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And so there was that kind of miscommunication and such. And I think now, like with texting now, you know, I've had been accused of like, I'm not responding quick enough, because there's some people who want to be, you know, what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not that type of person. And it's like, is something wrong? Did I, you know, silence, you know, they misconstrue it as like, I'm ignoring them or I don't want to do it, which is like, I've just been busy. Or like I was on vacation in the Yosemite where I didn't have, you know, I'm on vacation and they didn't have the best, you know, our cell phone falling out. So there's a lot of expectations now that we're now in this, we're not dealing with a 40-hour work week now. It's now like we should always kind of be available. That's caused a lot more stress. And so is that the kind of things that you're discussing as well?
Absolutely. I think that we're in this sort of instant gratification period of time where, you know, we, because we have our devices available, when somebody texts us, they just expect us to, no matter what's happening, to like text back or respond back or email back. When, I mean, you know, we're from a time where it was like, you know, landlines. So if someone didn't answer the phone, actually, even I'm before the, of course, you know, I think you probably can relate, the time before we had answer machines, you know, so if somebody went home, the phone would just ring. And then you just had to call back later. There was no voicemail. There was no answering machine. You know, when somebody was on the other line, it was a busy signal. You just had to call back. Yeah. But so then there was like a level of patience that we had to develop as a skill. And now with this instant gratification, with always having, you know, it started with pagers, you know, I paged you, call me back. But now it's like, I text you, text me right back. And so there has to be these parameters set up. I think another thing that can cause miscommunication or misunderstanding is that text communication lacks context. It often lacks tone of voice. And so what happens is if I'm communicating with you in this tone of voice, which, you know, is a very conversational tone of voice, but I communicate it through text message, it could come off as overly direct or condescending or some kind of way that it's not meant, because there's no tone of voice. So a lot of miscommunications can happen in email threads and in text threads because there's no tone of voice. And because we're in this digital age of communication, people are less willing to pick up the phone to resolve those problems. So one of the things I often teach and I often highly recommend is, if there is, and I'll give you actually a perfect example, because this actually happened to me yesterday at the time of this recording. I was communicating through Marco Polo, which is actually a video messaging app, with my partner in Conscious Anti-Racism. And we were talking about a proposal that we were doing. And so she communicated, she was giving me some feedback, but the way she communicated didn't land well for me. So I messaged her back, and I could have, and what most people would have done, was video message back all the reasons why that communication didn't land. And I was in an upset state. But what I did was I said, hey, I just want to let you know that communication made me feel some kind of way. Let's talk about it. Do you have 15 minutes to chat so that we can clear this up? And she immediately, you know, texts back and said, yes, absolutely. I apologize, you know, in advance. Da, da, da. And we have that kind of relationship. So then we got on the phone. Literally, we were on the phone for 15 minutes. We worked it out. And so I think that people think that these types of conversations have to take like hours, or they have to be long and drawn out. But oftentimes miscommunication through text communication can be easily resolved by just picking up the phone and having a quick conversation. And I think that's what's missing. So I think to your point, when we're in this instant gratification, we expect for it to be fast and furious, but then misunderstandings can happen when either a person doesn't respond at all or doesn't respond immediately, and then it gets misconstrued as silence, which means we have to set the parameters on how we respond. Like, I tell my family, I work during the day. If you text me during the day, it's going to be, I'm not going to respond right away. You call me in the middle of the day while I'm working, I'm not going to be answering the phone or even your voicemail until later on. If you call me after 10 p.m., you will get voicemail, right? So I think it's useful for people in communication to put parameters around how they are going to respond, when they are going to respond, so they set an expectation up front. And that's one thing that we don't do, and we haven't done well in our society with this instant gratification.
This podcast is sponsored by Doc2Doc Lending. Are you a physician looking to consolidate your loans, or maybe start a new project like opening up your own clinic? Doc2Doc Lending understands the unique financial challenges you face and is here to support you every step of the way. You can benefit from low interest rates, a lightning fast approval process, and personalized loan options tailored exclusively for physicians. This company was founded by doctors for doctors. Don't let financial limitations hold you back any longer. Visit bootstrapmd.com/doctodoc to unlock your path into financial freedom today. That's bootstrapmd.com/doc2doc, and you can get started right away. Dr. Doc Lending helps empower physicians one loan at a time. Yeah, that's a great example. And that's something that I'm guilty of as well, where I've gotten, you know, emails and, you know, it's like the way that it was construed. It was like, oh, why are you being so emotional? Or like anybody knows me, I'm not an emotional person. like, you don't really know me. I don't get that. I don't get that emotional. So like you said, there's this nuance with texting and email. I think another thing to bring up too is I love the idea of setting barriers. I also think the mode of communication as well, because yeah, I'll get, you know, texting I respond to, you know, quickly, emails not as quickly, but usually within the day. But then I'm getting communicated through Facebook Messenger or LinkedIn.
Right.
Check, you know,
right.
And there's so many ways that people kind of can communicate, and then they like to communicate through the one they like. So like, I know I have a client, they just like Facebook Messenger, mm-hmm. and I'm hardly ever on there. And so, hey, how come you're not responding? So I think putting barriers is great, but also the mode, the mm-hmm. way you respond, letting them know, you know, this is the way that we would like for them to respond.
Absolutely. I think that's brilliant. I think you kind of read my mind there, because I was thinking that too. Like, you know, I tell people, well, so when people call on the voice message, at the end of the voice message, it says, if you'd like a faster response, please text.
Yeah.
Right. So these are for friends and family members if they need a faster response. But I say, you know, otherwise I will respond within 24 hours, right? So I give them that parameter. But when I'm talking to people, like when I'm meeting people out, I say, well, best way to communicate with me really is text message, because I get so logged down when emails get lost. Now, there are certain people I'm like, will you please email me this, right? These are my preferred methods of communication. And for me, it's, you know, text, email, or LinkedIn messaging. I'm not really on Facebook Messenger like that. I'm definitely not on Instagram like that. And so like in terms of the business, this is from the business perspective, it's best to catch me either LinkedIn or email. But I set these parameters with people. I said, okay, this is the best way to communicate with me. This is the best time to communicate with me. And this is what you can expect in my response. Like, I don't sit by my phone and like I'm on a coaching call and I get a text. I'm not going to be like, hold on, let me respond to, you know, we're recording a podcast. I'm not going to be like, hold on, unless it's an emergency. Right. So I think that's exactly right. Like, we need to put parameters around also our preferred method. And it's also useful to say, hey, this is my preferred method. What's your preferred method? Okay, how can we meet in the middle? Right? Like, what would you be willing to, like, if you want to get me and you really want to get me, then you need to message me this way. And if I want to get you, then I really know I want to get you, then I'm going to message you that way. And that way we both have this sort of middle ground of how receiving message in the best way that we receive messages.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at my phone and it's just like, there's so many different ways mm-hmm. from WhatsApp to, you know, TikTok, Instagram and things like that. So, you know, I understand how as a professional sense is to have those barriers. But then you've got personal as well. Are you putting in the barriers to, let's say, your relatives and such?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're the people that I most have to set boundaries with. So you know, like I have, and I love talking to my family. I love my family. And like, so like my mom lives in a different time zone. So she knows I don't answer the phone after about 9:30. Because after 9:30, it's my, you know, I'm winding down. I don't want to talk on the phone. Actually, I don't answer the phone after 9 p.m. unless it's an emergency. Now, if it's an emergency, you know, like if my mom calls me after 9 p.m., I'm going to answer because I'm like, she knows not to call me after that time. So I'm going to be like, you good? She's like, and then she's, oh, I forgot. And I say, okay, well, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And I hang up the phone, right? My sister, same way. But like, I don't mind if they call me during the day, but they have to know I'm most likely not going to answer the phone. and I'm most likely not going to answer a text unless the text message says it's urgent, call me back. Then I'll do it at the next break. And I'll usually will text and say, call you on my break, right? And so that's like how I set those boundaries with my, usually it's my sisters and my mom. I mean, that's really the only people. I think the people in my friend circle, they're like me, you know, text before calling. Do you have a moment to talk? Right. That's the etiquette that we use in my friend circles. Hey, do you have 5 minutes to talk or do you have 15 minutes to talk? And then if they say, you know, not now, but later, then we figure that out. And then we get on the phone then. So that, when we're very clear about what our needs are, and I think this is sort of like the theme of it. When we're very clear about what our capability is and what our needs are, then we can communicate that with the people in our lives and set those boundaries. And then they honor them or they don't honor them. Now, they forget, that's one thing. But if they're consistently railroading those boundaries, then the level of stringentness, if that's a word, that you might need to enforce those boundaries may be a little bit more extreme than, like, say, someone who occasionally forgets. So if someone is continually railroading my boundary of not calling me after a certain time, then I may distance myself from that person because that's information about how they're going to treat me in other capacities. Yeah. And so that's another thing to note, is that all communication is information.
That's a good point. I think also too, you know, you just keep giving me examples in my head of people mm-hmm. that had, you know, some struggles with the communication. One point is I'm not the best person on the phone. You know, I'm much more comfortable doing like a Zoom. I like seeing mm-hmm. the face, to seeing yep. reactions when I'm saying something. Mm-hmm. My wife gets mad at me because I never call for pizza. Like, I make her call for pizza. I love the apps now that you can order.
Yes.
You know, I have this one, a friend who's actually, you know, a vendor of mine, and I occasionally train on this device that they sell, and so he communicates via voicemail, and I can't stand it because I hate playing that voicemail game. Okay, your tag, you're it. And yes. could we never get,
yes.
And it took some time, but yeah, if I had parameters, and I love this, and I'm going to start crafting it right now, is this, you know, when I'm dealing with somebody that I'm probably doing business with, it's like, hey, you know, if you need to get a hold of me, if it's an emergency, you call 911. You know, if you need to get a hold of me, it's texting is best. If it's nothing, something that's emergent, email is second,
yeah.
and a specific email. You know, the other thing too is, how many of us have one email address? I know you've got a bunch of
God. I have too. Like 5 or 6 email addresses.
So what would your be your recommendation, you know, for that?
Navigating email is definitely, I think, more challenging because I utilize different emails for different things.
Correct.
Now, the boundary that I have to set with emails is for myself. And so, you know, one of the things that I have had to start doing is scheduling emails. So, like, you know, if you answer an email at 2 o'clock in the morning, then people are going to start, you're like training them to this instant gratification, right? So if every time someone texts me or emails me, I immediately respond, then that's what they're going to expect. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, to play games, right? To be like, okay, I'm going to wait for a day to respond just to make them wait. But what I'm suggesting is that, you know, if you're having...
That's like dating.
Right. So I'm not suggesting that. What I'm suggesting is that if you're on family time, like maybe it's between 6 and 10 is family time, and someone emails you and it's not urgent, rather than responding at 10 o'clock at night, you wait till the next day. Or if you are going to respond, you're like, oh, well, this is an easy respond. Schedule that email for the next day. So we have this wonderful ability now to schedule emails in the future. And I had to start doing that because I know for myself, I'm a single mom. Delson goes to bed at night. I come back to the computer and I do work for a couple more hours. If I get an email, I want to respond to that email. I have had to make myself as a boundary, begin to schedule those emails for the next day to communicate, like, these are the hours in which I will respond to emails, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, like weekends, I have stopped emailing people on the weekends. What I do is if I'm crafting the email, I schedule it for Monday morning at 9 a.m. And that way it communicates, no, I don't work on the weekends. No, I will not, you know, unless it's an urgency, I will not work on the weekends. And there's not a lot that's urgent about what I do these days, right? In the consulting world, in the training world, there's not a lot that's urgent about that. And so I think that's an important boundary to set as well.
Yeah, and that's and then speaking of that was our solution to that business partner who was emailing us every morning and getting all of our employees all flustered was scheduling it that same email. It wasn't immediate, but scheduling on Monday morning, you know.
I think another thing that's important to talk about, you know, just as we talk about communication, is this aspect of conflict and difficult conversations. You know, we kind of alluded to it when we were talking about, you know, context out of context in text communication. And I think that we don't do conflict very well. We don't do difficult conversations very well. I think we might do them well with our patients because we're trained to do them well with our patients. But when it comes to having those challenging conversations with each other, or when, like, when it comes to emotional responses and managing with each other, it can be very challenging. And we go straight to the blame, you know, the you did this, you did that. We don't operate from a place of equanimity and calm. We operate from this place of high emotion. And I think one thing that's important, because hard conversations happen every day. Like, just as I shared with my partner, Jill, you know, she said something that sort of rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, it's a partnership. It's going to happen. Like, it's the nature. When we talk with families, we talk with our kids, there's going to be stuff that ruffles our feathers all the time. And how do we self-regulate in order to be able to communicate and reconnect with our thinking mind? So I think that's another thing that we're not taught, that we have to learn as a skill. And that's why emotional intelligence is so important to, like, think about. You know, we think about emotional intelligence in our community like it's woo, like it's the soft skill, like it's, you know, it's not non-essential. It's just, you know, it's that stuff out there and that woo-woo stuff. But there have been a lot of research that has shown that learning how to regulate our emotions when we're upset connects us to our communication centers a little bit better, so that we can say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. This is the way it lands for me, rather than, you know, you did this and you did that and you are this and you are that. I think that is just going to activate the other person's, you know, survival response. They're grr too. And so I think that we could stand as a community to learn how to better regulate and communicate what we're feeling. Whereas I know that's been like a no in our community. No, we don't talk about feelings. What was that movie? We don't talk about Bruno.
That's right.
We don't talk about Bruno. It's like, we don't talk about feelings. No. But we should normalize talking about our emotions. And it's not that we let our, because if we don't talk, if we don't name them and we don't name our experience, then it gets bottled up and we're going to act it out anyway.
I think too is I've been known to have my emails very short. I mean, how do you feel when you get an email that's like eight paragraphs long?
I can't read an email that's 8 paragraphs.
And it's like, why respond with another long email when obviously this person has something to say? And hey, received your email. Let's talk on a Zoom. Schedule it for this so-and-so date. And so I joke about this because my days are full of Zoom calls, but I have to schedule communication for me. And sometimes you have to like train your person that's like, I can't be available. I mean, there's one person that I work with, and you probably know this person, but he doesn't like to schedule. And it just drives me nuts.
Oh gosh.
And it's just over time, it's just taken some time to like, hey, let's plan this time at so and so. I also think too, it's like You got to respect that time too. I know things can happen, right? But how many times have we had to reschedule or I'm 5 or 10 minutes late? I know first time it's happened. Second time, third time it happens, then they're not respecting your time.
That's right.
And that's a discussion. And then we have to discuss that.
Yeah. And put some things in place. Like, you know, hey, if we can't, you know, if you can't respect the schedule, we can't schedule. we can't work together. Like you can't work together. I totally agree with that. And that's another place to put in those boundaries. It's like, you know, people want to be heard. People want to be seen. People want to be respected and people want to be valued. And it's not just in our verbal language, but it's in our actions. And I think that a lot of people miss that communication is only 7% words and 93% everything else. And so when you speak your words, you're making a declaration. But when you actually have your words and your actions be congruent, then you're speaking a whole communication about what you value, how you value the other person, how you respect another person. And so I think that's also a very important point as matching our promises to our actions and listening for others' promises and actions to be matched as well, because people will say things and they will act another way. And so I think that's just as important as communicating is listening, and not just listening with our ears, but listening with our eyes as well.
Yeah. And again, face to face is often ideal, but in this, you know, in this area, you know, a Zoom or a Google Meet or something is probably the second best.
Yeah.
So this has been a great discussion on communication. Any last minute thoughts before we end the call today? We've got to give us some great parameters of what to use. I'm now going to start by using an email that I'm going to be sending out to set up those parameters, or just telling them these are the parameters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I'd like to leave people with is that communication, there's so many nuances and intricacies to communication, especially now that we have this sort of like digital aspect to it. And, you know, I think a lot of us as doctors, as clinicians feel like, oh, I'm a good communicator, right? And the question I would have is, are you? Like, how good are you, right? Like, when you communicate, do people feel seen, heard, respected, and valued and welcomed? And if not, then we have to look at our skill set. And as I think as physicians and clinicians, we need to never be too big to learn more. Never feel like there's not an opportunity to learn more. So that's why I created the course that I created, because I feel like, you know, like I've been working in communication for well over a decade. I mean, this is the work I do, neuroscience-based communication. That's neurolinguistic programming. And in doing that, like I've learned all of these intricacies, all these ways to frame things. And it's why I can work with the most difficult people and bring them over to a different side, bring them over to a different point of view, a different thought process, help them to heal, help navigate conflict, help them navigate conflict between people and between people in their organizations. It's because I've taken the time to learn the intricacies and the nuances of communication, that which includes listening, body language, all of those things. So I want to leave the audience with, you know, always be learning communication.
I love it. I love it. If someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way? Or you don't communicate with anybody, right?
So the best way to reach out to me would probably be to go to, I'm going to give you two ways. The first is if you're on LinkedIn, I love me some LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn. I do message on LinkedIn. Please, when you do the connection on LinkedIn, just say, I heard you on Mike's podcast, right? Because people who like do connection requests and they have nothing, I will tend to scrutinize those a little bit more and maybe not accept them. So just make sure you give me context. Yeah. You can go to mindremappingacademy.com, mindremappingacademy.com. And there are several ways to connect with me based on how you want to engage with me. So I do have communication course, Communication That Transforms. And it is all about the intricacies and nuances of communication. It is CME accredited for up to 22 AMA Category 1 CME credits. So get your year's worth of CME, right? And learn communication, learn a good skill. And then, you know, if you're in an organization and you want me to come speak or you want me to come speak to your practice or do a team training, I also do that as well. So just go to mindremappingacademy.com. And that is where you can learn all about those various offerings, including coaching or coach trainings as well.
Myesha, again, always a pleasure to talk with you. You shared a lot of great nuggets I'm going to be implementing today. I know my audience will be as well. And again, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's really good to be here again.
And thank you all for listening. As physicians, as entrepreneurs, we're going to have ups and downs on our days. Just remember, do a little something each day to keep you closer to your goals and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now, let's get to work.